and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to a woman who has written a book called 101 Ways to Save Money on Healthcare. And her name is Cynthia Kelker. Did I say that correct?
Kelker.
I'm sorry. I see the O and I want to say the O. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
This is a pretty interesting book, to say the least. What made you write a book like this? I mean, it's very timely. Is that one of the reasons you wrote it?
Well, that's the exact reason that I wrote it. I was listening to the politicians, it's been like a year ago, and at first I thought they were going to save the country money on health care, and then I decided, no, that's not going to happen, it's just politics. And it made me a little bit angry, in fact, because there are ways to save, and so I sat down and wrote out a list and turned it into a book.
Right. And there's quite a few ways that things you don't even think about. That's what makes this book so interesting. And I must say, this book was provided by Plume Publishing, which is, I think, a division of Penguin. And it's only $13, but there are so many different ways. What kind of a doctor are you, first of all?
A family practice doctor. So the book is written from that perspective.
Now, are your patients going to read this book and think, well, now I can...
Well, it has a bit of an impact because I'm really attuned to, like, giving people discounts and helping everybody save money.
And where are you based out of? What city?
In Akron, Ohio.
Akron, Ohio. I'm in Pennsylvania here.
Neighbors.
Yeah, not too far away. What is the one thing, if you could pick one thing, that people waste the most money on or don't get the most discount on? I mean, is it hospital care? Is it office visits? What?
Well, kind of depends what you mean. The biggest bucks are hospital and extended care facility care, but most people aren't in those situations. So the average listener would be maybe kind of waste. The two biggest things would be medications and then maybe not using the doctor appropriately, shall I say. Going when you don't need to. Not going when you do need to.
Right. But the question is, how do you know when you need to and when you... I mean, it's all really a gut, you know, you have to use your common sense.
Well, you do. And not just common sense, somebody's experience, maybe your own experience, maybe your mother's, maybe your grandmother's. And that's one thing that's really, I think, lacking is people don't have a non-professional who has some common sense and also life experience to turn to. And really, that's where I start out in the whole book is... taking advantage of people you may know to talk to. I see a lot of people who don't seem to have somebody to just ask simple questions like, do I need to go to the doctor every time I have a sore throat? Of course, the answer to that is no. But when do you decide? It helps to have a mother or grandmother who maybe has seen strep throat and might recognize it better than, say, a 20-year-old mother who doesn't know too much because they're so young.
Is there a way, a home cure for strep throat, or is it just how long it lasts, whether you should go see a doctor, or what determines whether it's serious or not?
Well, we do treat strep throat when it's really strep, but most sore throats are not really strep, and if you have a cold, and especially if your voice is hoarse, it's almost never strep. So, if you have a cold and some drainage, and your voice is a little hoarse, and you have somewhat of a sore throat, and everybody else has a cold, it's almost for sure not strep. Now, if you have a high fever and your tonsils are coated with pus, and especially if you have a real fine rash on your stomach, that usually is strep. Or if you have little red dots on the roof of your mouth, that usually is strep. You don't always know. And sore throats may not be the biggest reason people come to the doctor when they don't need to.
Well, I've always been told that strep is very serious and you shouldn't ignore it.
Right, you shouldn't, although that's another interesting question, too, and the strep that we see nowadays is probably not exactly the strep that we're seeing, say, 50 years ago, but the reason we treat strep isn't really even to cure the infection, it's to prevent rheumatic heart disease, and if you take the antibiotics, it helps you get better about one day faster, which might count if you're missing work, might count if you're missing school, but the reason is really to prevent the rheumatic heart disease.
It's interesting because you talk about, in your book, combining doctor visits. I find that fascinating. I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, you can actually tell the doctor, look, I want to come and I want you to look at both these things at one time. And are they open to doing that, most doctors, or does it vary depending on the doctor?
I'm sure it depends on the doctor. Some doctors will just walk out of the room. A more kind-hearted doctor will not. But this is another example of working with your doctor. Doctors really don't like it so much when you come for one problem, and then when the doctor thinks you're done and the time is up, then you bring up another problem. Because either it's going to cheat the next patient, or you're not going to have time to pay attention to it, or it just doesn't get addressed very well. But if you call ahead of time and say, I'm coming for my diabetes and I happen to have a sore throat, can I see the doctor for both those things at the same time? I'd say the answer is almost always yes.
So we need to speak up more as patients. I mean, we need to know our doctor better. Is it a good idea to get to know the doctor better? I mean, to have a good rapport with him?
Yeah, I'd say that's the best way to save money on health care. For example, every day I call in medicines for people who happen to be sick or they need refills or something because I know them and I could trust them. And if it's somebody who I can't even remember who they are, well, I'm not likely to do that because I really need to know who I'm talking to and what I'm doing. People don't really think of it so much as a two-way relationship, but it is. And if you kind of treat your doctor like you treat another person, a real person, then you're more likely to get extra things and have them help you in other ways.
And that's the name of the game. I mean, that's what you want. You want your doctor to be open, to tell you things. And, you know, it's not every day you come across a doctor that really cares and really, I mean, about every patient. I mean, it's very difficult. I don't know how many patients you see. I don't know how many patients a regular doctor would see at the time. But,
well, you know, most family doctors are seeing a patient probably every 10 minutes or so. I'm not seeing them that fast. I have an older set of patients, and also I like to talk to them more. And even though a doctor may be able to figure out a problem and have an answer in 5 minutes, it's very hard to convey that information and for a person to absorb it. Sometimes you have to say it three different ways for them to really understand. So if you have a doctor who's just rushing through and has 20 people in the waiting room, well, of course, you're not going to get as much as if your doctor spends a half an hour with you. And doctors are kind of pressured, to see more and more and more and more patients, and that doesn't look like it's going to get any better. And it also depends how their office is. Like I talked to a group of medical students and residents this week, and about 19 out of 20 of them said they plan to be employed physicians. Only one thought she would have her own practice. And if you are an employee, you don't have much say-so in the whole thing. You will see as many patients as they want you to and try to cram them in. And that just seems to me counterproductive to really helping a person.
And something's going to get left undone. And
you could not squeeze in a second problem at that rate. And if you tried, you wouldn't get it well done. But another thing is, people don't really understand how office visits are coded for. There's a set of criteria how it's coded, whether it's a level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the amount of time that they schedule goes according to that. So if you call ahead and say, I have a set of problems, and I think it would take half an hour to speak to the doctor, and I would like to schedule a half an hour visit, well, then maybe you get a half an hour visit. But if you just call and say, I want an appointment, you probably get a standard 10, 15-minute visit and, well, hope to get done, whatever that is. You know, people don't think ahead so much. If you're going to get your car fixed and you need tires and a transmission or something, well, you know you got to plan on that. But when you go to the doctor, people sometimes think, well, you know, they'll just fix me.
And the fear of there's so many people that have fears of the doctor, too. They think that if they go to the doctor, the doctor's going to find something wrong. Or if they go to the hospital, they're going to find something wrong. How do you overcome that fear, I guess, is the question. And, I mean, some people have it inside. I mean, I guess we all have a fear of a hospital. Because that's...
You only feel going to the dentist.
Yeah.
But I'd say the best way is to get a doctor you can really communicate well with. one who you're not afraid of. I am like the most laid-back doctor, and really nobody should be afraid of me. But some people are. But it isn't really me they're afraid of. They're afraid of the idea of a doctor. So I'd say the best thing to do is, if you need to, shop around, find a doctor who you do like. Don't spend 10 years with a doctor you don't even like, can't communicate with. That doesn't make sense. There seems to be enough of us around just now, anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And then there's also the consideration of, are your symptoms serious? I mean, how many people have a heart attack, say, and don't even know they're having it? Or maybe it's a minor heart attack, how do you tell when you've got something major going on?
Yeah, well, there is a fine line there, and that's another good time when it helps to have, say, a doctor who knows you well. For example, if someone calls me who I know and they say, well, I'm kind of short of breath, I can't go up the stairs, my chest a little tight, I might say, well, that sounds like you might be having a heart attack, go to the hospital. Or if I know they have asthma, then I'll say, well, how's your asthma? So it helps to have someone know you, but it also really helps to know more medicine. So I spent a fair amount of time in that book, not just saying how to save money on healthcare, but help educate people on when they really need to go based on what the problem is.
You sound like you really care about your patients. That's a wonderful thing. I'm sure there are a lot of doctors like you, but I doubt that every doctor feels the same way you do.
Well, I think part of it is because I limit myself. There's something called compassion fatigue. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. But people get worn out caring for other people. And I think you see it in the hospital all the time. The nurses are just way too busy. And there are some with very compassionate souls who will be compassionate regardless of how busy they are. But
it's amazing how quickly you realize which are which. When you're in the hospital, I was in the hospital in February. And you can tell right away, pretty much right away, how much somebody really cares. I mean, and who's just saying the words.
Yeah. Well, you can only care so much if you're seeing somebody every 5 or 10 minutes. If you spend half an hour with them, you can care a lot more.
Right. What prescription medication, of course, is a huge issue now. I mean, you can spend so much money. Now, I get my prescriptions from offline and save a lot of money. And you'd say that the nearest ShopRite, which is right across the street from me, I could end up spending double or triple the amount. So where do you go? I mean, do you tell, as a doctor, do you tell your patients about this, or what do you do?
Oh, yes, and there's so many different situations. In our state, we have a lot of people with mail-away pharmacies. But funny thing is, some of the mail-away pharmacies cost more than going across the street because there's so many discount pharmacies. Since Walmart started that $4 list,
right,
almost every pharmacy has followed suit. But they haven't all, and my cash-paying patients, I steer away from a certain pharmacy, which will go unnamed, because they charge a lot more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And patients don't actually know that pharmacies can charge more. They might charge $20 more or $40 more. Or this one really hurt the other day. My son took the dog to the vet, who you might hear barking out there.
Right.
And got cephalexin, and they charged him $45 for medicine you can get for $4. It just made me kind of sick. We didn't have time to talk about it ahead of time, but anyway, that doesn't even seem ethical to charge 10 times as much. Most pharmacies don't charge 10 times as much, but they might charge twice as much. So you need to ask. And you can download online the $4 list from Walmart and Kmart. And around here we have Giant Eagle. But whatever your local pharmacy is, you can look it up. You can ask them.
Now, you separate the book, like you mentioned before, the save money on doctor visits, save money on prescription medications, and then you have preventive health care, chronic health problems, acute illness, medical testing. There's a lot of different things in this book. Hospital expenses, I mean, anything you can think of, health care, is probably covered in this book.
I think so. Anything the average person would need, it's really aimed at the, a person who would be seeing a family doctor. If you have some really strange disease, you might not find that in there.
Mm-hmm.
All, Most of the common things are diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, strains, sprains, sore throats, ear infections, sinus infections, etc., etc. I think they're all in there.
Right, they definitely are. There's so much information there. I mean, it's a good book to take to the doctor with you.
Yes, and you know, Penguin, I had Penguin put it out in this little book form, which I think would be very handy to put in your purse and take it with you. And if you have a problem, sit in the waiting room and read it. I think most family doctors would agree with the ideas in there. They might not like it entirely, because for one thing I say, ask your doctor for a discount, and, might cut into the bottom line there. But they do agree with the basic principles that you can save on all these different aspects of healthcare, but you have to be informed. And a lot of places, they don't go out of their way to tell you how to save money.
Now, another issue, and of course, in Pennsylvania here, it's really an issue because there's a lot of lawsuits. Apparently, there's an issue with lawsuits in Pennsylvania, and a lot of doctors have left the state. I mean, and there's still a lot. But what do you do if you can't find a family doctor? I mean, if it's just, I guess you would, but I mean, what do you do if you can't find one? I mean, are there any helpful suggestions there?
You don't have to have a family doctor. A lot of times an internist will be functioning as a family doctor, or for kids, a pediatrician. But if you can't find one, you could call your local medical society. You could certainly call the hospital. And if you have insurance, you could call your insurance and ask them for their provider panel.
I mean, do you only have a certain set of patients? I mean, if somebody calls you and says they want to become one of your patients, what do you tell them?
We do tell them that we're taking new patients, but the critical factor seems to be what insurance they have, and because people don't want to go to a doctor not on their insurance plan, and I'm not on a lot of plans. That's one way. Another way I limited my practice. People think, well, doctors don't have to do anything to be on these plans, but that is not true. For example, the big one that I'm on around Akron, I have to pay $1,000 a year to be part of. So if I'm on, 20 different plans, that's $20,000. And they're not all that way. You don't have to pay for every one of them. But there's that, and there's the red tape and the aggravation of the whole thing. And then, in Northeast Ohio, where I am, we have a couple of different medical schools, so we have really enough, maybe too many doctors. But in a rural area, it's a little tougher. I know some people will drive an hour or two to get to a doctor, and that's a problem. I did 3 years in public health service in Kentucky in the Appalachian area, and that's because they had a doctor shortage down there. So in those communities, I would say do what you can to keep your doctor.
I mean, there's so much to do. There's so much to be aware of, and so much. As a consumer, as somebody who uses doctors, and everybody does. I mean, I know people that don't go to the doctor, but you have to at some point. You can't just not go to the doctor. I wish we could all diagnose ourselves and know what's wrong. I mean,
yeah.
But the fact of the matter is it true that women have different symptoms for things than men do a lot of times? Like for heart attacks and different things?
They certainly can, and it depends on the problem. The heart attacks is the one you hear about on TV a lot.
Right.
Because don't always have chest pain, for one thing, and you don't always have nausea. Of course, not all men do either, especially diabetics. But, for example, I had a lady a couple years ago walk in my office. She didn't think she was having a heart attack. She just was a little sweaty, short of breath. She's diabetic, too. She had no chest pain at all, but her heart was going 150. And she was having a heart attack at that moment, but she didn't think she was. We sent her with the paramedics, and she was. And then other things, that's the biggest one, I'd say. When women get older, sometimes with urine infections, they have no urine symptoms. They might just get tired or just know they don't feel right and even get confused. So that's different from a younger person who'd have burning or frequent urination.
That's interesting. I mean, we're all different, but the different symptoms is, you would think everybody would have the same symptoms, but it just doesn't work that way.
But doctors do like it when you come in with the textbook symptoms. That makes it easy.
Yeah. Is there still a lot of misdiagnosis, do you think? I mean, is there too much in your opinion? I guess any little bit is too much, but I mean, does it seem like it's worse than it ever was, or better, or what?
Well, I've been in medicine about 25 years, so the biggest thing I would say is, if you don't spend the time with the patient, you just can't figure the things out. And this is what happens a lot. It's way faster to order a test to say, oh, you have stomach pain, let's get an x-ray, than to sit down and talk at greater length about why a person might. Or here's another example. Patient came in this week, 30-year-old guy with headaches. Kind of bad headaches, and they're getting worse and worse. Now, what is that? Is that a brain tumor? Is that an aneurysm? Or, if you talk a little bit longer, you might find out, like we did, that, well, he doesn't have headaches on the weekends. So, that's not a brain tumor.
So that's something at work that's causing him to get headaches?
A combination of stress and, I think, the position where he sits at the computer all day. Because he feels fine on the weekends. But you would not know that unless you took the time to talk to them. Because he might not think to tell you. You know, patients don't, if they knew everything, they just diagnose themselves. But they might not think that that's important. Anyway, so he could have had a $3,000 CAT scan. Or if not, just $2,000 CAT scan. And he had a deductible. He would have paid the whole thing himself. But we didn't get one because, of course, they go away on the weekends, and he's okay. They do teach doctors, even now in medical school, that the history is the most important thing. In fact, it's about 90% of it, I would say. If you can't figure out what it is by talking to a person, you don't get that much more information by testing.
Now, if you have if you've had something serious in the past, is it a good idea to I know some people wear like bracelets that tell what it is. Is it a good idea to do that? Say you have you've had heart trouble in the past, or you've had something in the past that the doctor needs to know about, and maybe you know you're not at your regular doctor. I mean, what do you suggest?
Yes, if you're in danger of say being in a situation like car wreck or passing out or something at home, and somebody really needs to know that, it should be on your body, on a necklace or a bracelet, like if you're allergic to penicillin, or I should add, if you're on Viagra and then have a heart attack, because the medicines can kill you. But the information should be there. Although, on the other hand, what I see more often is that I would find more useful would be for elderly people who live alone to have Lifeline or something like it, or a cell phone, or some way, if they fall down, they can contact somebody. Because I do hear of people who fall down, they can't get up, just like on TV.
There seems to be a lot of falling lately, especially older folks falling. I mean, you hear about that an awful lot.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it's because people are living older. A lot of people live by themselves. And then a real big problem there is the medicines are taken too many medicines, or they don't know if there are times when they shouldn't take their medicine. Like people might still take a water pill on a day when they happen to be having vomiting and diarrhea, and then you're going to get dehydrated. So you, the patient, and somebody else should talk with the doctor both, so they understand the nuances of the medicine.
Boy, the importance of getting to know your doctor well and having him, you know, asking him questions. I know when I'm with the doctor, I there's always something I forget to ask. And, you know, as soon as you leave, you think of everything you wanted to ask. But is it a good idea to write everything down before you go?
Oh, sure, yes. I say that for sure. Make notes, and make notes while you're there. And I often write out notes for my patients because, they don't bring their notepad. And it helps. And I frequently ask people to bring somebody with them. Now, you sound pretty young, pretty healthy, so you might not have any need to bring somebody. But once you're getting older, say, let's just say 70 or so, and you're on a number of medicines, which are hard to remember, something. Maybe you can't hear. And it's also kind of unfamiliar to you. It's really good to bring somebody with you so you get two sets of ears and two brains and you get more input.
Sometimes, you know, a different perspective is always nice. You know, sometimes, like I said, you forget things. You forget to ask the right questions.
Yes. So, well, someone your age probably isn't going to bring someone with you to help, but writing them down ahead of time is a great idea. And it saves time, too. If you can get way more done. I spend part of one chapter talking about how you can plan ahead and get more out of your doctor visits. People usually don't even think about it. Well, I'm going to the doctor. That's end of story. It's all they say. As opposed to, I'm going to the doctor because I have a headache and I have a rash on my foot and I have diabetes or whatever. To be a lot more specific about it and to think what you want to get out of it. And people put too much, they become children in a relationship like that, whereas the doctor's a parent and the doctor's just supposed to do everything. But you're equal adults, and you need to think of it as an interaction like that and see what you want to get out of it and what you can get out of it.
I notice on page 18 there's a whole chapter on ask to pay by the hour. Now, there's something I've never heard of before. You can ask to pay by the hour?
There are doctors who work their schedule that way. I've known of some who it's even pay by the minute. But you could pay by the hour. I think actually a lot of doctors would kind of like that because it would make things a lot simpler. The coding situation we have is way too complex.
And we don't count the minutes we're sitting waiting in the waiting room.
So, but, you know, if you wanted to get a 15-minute visit, if you got one of those doctors who's on an 8-minute plan, if you want 15 minutes and just say, I will pay for 15 minutes of your time, how much is that? Then they'd probably have to go think, how much is that? I don't know. But they could figure that out. Or a half an hour, or an hour. And especially for people who don't have insurance. Now, or if you have a lot of kids, sometimes people try to squeeze another little kid in there and say, well, this kid's sick, or what about this one? And it doesn't really get addressed that well. But it would be easier if you did just buy half an hour of time, say, in this time period I want to try to get this and this and this done. And then the patient would have to be very organized. And I tell in the book how to do this.
Right. Is it wise to ask your doctor for a discount?
Well, you know, it depends what kind of patient you are. If you're a Medicare patient, you really can't do that. And if you have an HMO or a copay, you really can't do that. But if you're self-pay, I would say you should do that.
Are doctors open for that? Is it going to be something where you're going to have to convince them, or are they open for it, do you think?
Well, one kind of discount I think they'd be quite open to would be a billing discount, because if you pay cash at the time, that saves the doctor's office at least $5 to $10 in billing. So you should be able to knock that off if you're paying.
Wow.
And
a simple little thing like that.
Yeah. And it really helps if you explain your situation. Like if you say, I lost my job, I can't get unemployment, my kid's sick, or whatever, tell them, and their doctor's more likely to help you. But
right.
If you say, I've had people say this, well, I can't pay you because I'm going to Hawaii. Well, you find your doctor to be a little less sympathetic.
Yeah, I would think so.
But that's not how it usually is. Usually it's that people are going through a rough time. They're afraid that their doctor bills are going to mean they can't do something else, like pay the rent or the car payment. And so I think if you approach it rationally, a doctor would be reasonable there, at least the family doctors I know.
Now, as to x-rays, how do we know to trust everything the doctor says? I mean, what if something is being done that it shouldn't be done? How do we know? I mean, do you just have to kind of sense it?
Well, I think it would make most sense to have an equal discussion on it. Of course, when I say equal, it's your health. The doctor has some knowledge that you want. I have a chapter in there on can that x-ray wait. Well, x-rays cost more even than I thought. I check back on these things periodically, and I keep thinking, how can that be? $300 for like a chest x-ray. You have to think you're going to get that much benefit from doing it. For example, a chest x-ray. Well, you come in with a cough. Maybe you're coughing stuff up. Maybe your chest hurts a little bit. Well, the decision to get a chest x-ray is based on a lot of things, like how sick you are, how old you are.
But we're at the mercy of the doctor. I mean, if the doctor wants to do it, who are we to argue, you know?
I'm not saying argue.
Yeah.
I'm saying have a logical discussion because, for example, you could say, this could be true, I'm 38 years old and I'm coughing and I don't smoke and could we try some antibiotics first and then if I don't get better, get a chest x-ray. That's a real reasonable approach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it takes more time to have that discussion, and a doctor who's trying to rush out of the room might not. It's very easy to write chest x-ray and then go get the x-ray. And it's not just for that. It's like that other patient we were talking about with the headaches.
Right.
He was willing to get a CAT scan if I really, really, really thought he needed it, even though he would have to pay $2,000 out of his own pocket that he doesn't really have. So his question was, does he really, really, really need it? And that's when we got into a discussion of his job.
Right.
And when the headaches came, and were they every day.
So it does help to talk more about it, talk and discuss it, and to really find out what's going on, rather than make an assumption or not tell your doctor everything that he needs to know, he or she needs to know.
Yes, and it makes a lot more sense to spend an extra 10 minutes with your doctor, which, you know, could legitimately cost more money, right?
Mm-hmm.
It maybe costs another $30 or maybe another $50. I don't know. But that's still way cheaper than getting a $300 chest x-ray or a $2,000 CAT scan. And I see this in medicine all the time. Doctors order tests because it takes longer to talk. That's kind of crazy. It shouldn't really be that way, but it's all complex and can't really be fixed right now. So the book is aimed at the way the situation truly is and what you can do about it the way it really is right now.
Now, how have your patients been reacting to your book? What do they say? What did they say to you about it?
Well, one thing they say is, it sounds just like me. So I guess the way I write and the way I talk is similar. And a lot of it is what I tell my patients anyway. I have had more patients ask me for a discount. And actually, what I've taken to doing is just, if I think they need a discount, just offering it up front. I don't even wait for them to ask. I just ask them.
Well, you're rare, I'm telling you. I don't think we can expect that from every doctor we have.
Of course, I'm not getting rich on the book, and I'm not getting rich on the doctor.
Well, that's not the point of writing the book, I'm sure. I mean, that's...
No, but you...
You obviously care about people, and that's very... That's very wonderful.
It would be good if patients realize that the doctors... family doctors aren't as wealthy as they might think. I have an example in there that a family doctor, just say family doctor is working and a spouse is not, the income is about the same as if you have two teachers. Okay, and people don't think teachers are rich, and the income is not that different. That's another question. Should specialists get paid more? And I would say yes, but I'm not sure they should get paid four times as much.
Mm-hmm.
There are people like brain surgeons. I want them to be well compensated. I want them to know what they're doing. The risk is high, and when you're taking a risk, you should get more.
Are there any symptoms that people continuously ignore that you have found in your practice? I mean, does it have? Are there some that it seems to happen with more than others?
I would say maybe stomach symptoms.
What if we really just don't know? I mean, if it's after hours, the doctor's not there, and we just don't know how serious, whether it's serious or not. I mean, you don't want to call 911 unless it is an emergency, but...
Well, certainly if you have a doctor, again, who knows you, you can call that doctor, and then they can, if they know you pretty well, they can tell you...
Oh, the answering service, yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
If you can get the doctor on the phone, that's a big if.
Yeah. Somehow I'm thinking all doctors kind of do things the way I do, which is not the case. But But if you can, it helps to have a doctor who knows you. There's also, I have a chapter on the Ask a Nurse lines. Most of the hospitals have an Ask a Nurse service where you can call up and ask them. So before you,
oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so before you run down to the hospital, you could call down there and say, do I really need to come?
And you have to pay that ambulance. You know, an ambulance nowadays is really expensive.
Yeah, and I'm in a town where we have the paramedics that you don't actually pay for, but they don't always take you. Then the ambulance is $400 or $500.
That's nothing. Mine here was at least $1,600.
Oh, well, might as well walk.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite expensive to get an ambulance. And, you know, that's really, and you haven't even gotten to the hospital yet. You haven't even gotten to the real expense.
Well, I can't quite justify that expense. There are things in medicine that just don't make any sense. For example, hearing aids.
You must get frustrated a lot.
Well, Medicare does not pay for hearing aids. And they cost a lot. Even the really cheapo ones are about $800, and some are $5,000. And
how long do they last, too, is another question. You know, how long does it...
They last pretty long, where you need batteries for most of them, except rechargeable batteries on the one that the Bionic Man is selling.
Right.
But when you think about this, you know, you can get a television, you can get a computer, you can get a fancy BlackBerry thing or whatever for a few $100. Surely they could make hearing aids for the same amount. I just don't really see how they can possibly cost that much. There's quite a bit of a profit on that. And then...
You should write another book, Ways to Improve the Healthcare.
I'm waiting for somebody to call me.
Oh, really? I mean, I'm sure you have plenty of good ideas. I mean, you know all the ins and outs of a lot of the stuff, so you know what's needed and what isn't.
I would stop the advertising on TV. They have those things on there. This service is free, the power wheelchairs, or the diabetic supplies, or whatever. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to pay a dime. Just call us now. And so the patients think that's the way it is. And it's not really the way it is. But why do they even do that? Because they're making... And why do they advertise that way? Because they're making a fair amount of money on that.
It's incredible.
Well, no one's asked me about health reform, but I would have gone about it somewhat differently.
Right.
But there you...
There's so much. I mean, the list goes on and on and on about what could be better that isn't better. And with Obama doing what he did, I mean, is it going to improve anything? You know, when everybody gets all excited and thinks, well, it's going to improve, but it doesn't always improve the way they say it's going to.
Well, you know, just this week, the 23rd of what, of yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Some of the Obama care stuff going into effect, including the part where kids up through age 25 can stay on their parents' insurance. Now, we call them kids, but they're not exactly kids. They can stay on their parents' insurance even if they're married. And they can't exactly charge directly more for that if you have one kid or two kids, or if they're 10 or 20, the price is the same. But of course, the result is that the insurance goes up for everybody. You just can't cover more people for less money, of course. That doesn't make sense. Like they had a thing on TV is that the average insurance in 2011 rates are like 20% higher, which is a big jump. They've been going up maybe 10%, but 20% is enough that a lot of people are just not going to get it.
That's really scary to think that they're... Now, I forget, the figure they throw around is, I've heard as high as 45 million people uninsured, which it's hard to believe there's that many that are uninsured. But, I mean, how in the world do people do it?
I don't know. I think the whole thing is something's wrong with the whole thing, and tying it to employment is probably not right. And the government programs aren't run well enough that I could recommend copying those. The free enterprise system must be the answer somehow, but You know, doctors aren't even allowed to compare prices with one another. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, they're not allowed?
No, we're not allowed. I can't remember the name of the law that falls under that, something to do with.
I bet you could tell me a lot of things I didn't know before. And some of them are in this book. Probably a lot of them are in this book. But
I tried to not get too awfully political in the book. I really tried to make it really practical for what somebody could do.
Well, yeah, what you want to do, you want to save people money. I mean, what's the point if that's not your aim?
Yeah. Well, in there too, since I've been in medicine a while, a whole bunch of medicines and treatments that were by prescription when I started or along the way, now they're over the counter. And people can treat themselves for a lot of things if they just know how. Well, mostly people don't know how,
mm-hmm.
because, of course, they're not thinking about health every day like doctors do. But I spent a couple chapters describing how to do, I think, 20 different things to treat yourself at home. And, of course, if you're self-pay, you could save a lot of money. And even nowadays, with copays going up to $50, you know, a person might think it's worth $50 to, you know, read a chapter and decide.
Right.
Do I need to?
Well, you have to be aware of so many different things. That's the problem. And as you get older, you don't remember as much. And that makes it harder, too.
Right.
That's where having the good young friend is a help. And I have a friend who does that, actually, make sure that the older people get to their appointments on time. It's such a wonderful thing to do, and you're helping so many different people every day. And, I mean, the rewards just pay for themselves in that alone.
Yeah. That reminds me of another thing. I don't know about where you are, but around here, the hospitals have started offering free transportation to the hospital for certain tests.
Well, oh, is that right? That's interesting.
For any of the tests.
Does it have to be a certain test?
No, I said that, but what I really meant was for their tests, but of course it would have to be at their facility. So, I mean, they're trying to get your business, I'm sure. But
why are the hospitals hurting so much? Is it because people aren't paying, aren't paying their bills, or what is it?
Boy, I don't know if it's exactly that they're hurting, because at least around here, the hospitals are just building bigger and more.
You wouldn't know it.
And it seems like there's more hospitals and fewer people. So I don't know if they're hurting, but one part of it is that they don't necessarily get reimbursed for every patient they see. Like if you don't have much money and you're in a hospital and you owe $10,000 and you can't pay it, well, they do get some government funds to cover it, but they probably don't cover it all. I really can't say so much how the hospitals are doing. It seems like they got way more money than the private family doctors do.
Yeah.
We don't get subsidies for anything. Like, for example, government clinics can buy vaccines for about a third less than I can buy vaccines. So, of course, they will charge less because, you know, they have got a discount to start with. And so people might as well take advantage of that at the health department. You're paying your taxes, might as well go get a flu shot from them.
Right.
Or in my neighborhood, Walgreens has a sign out, flu shots all day, every day. Well, they're kind of taking patients away from the doctors who get their flu shots later for some reason. Of course, why do they do that? Because they get more business. And you go in there, get a flu shot, and you buy whatever you buy.
It's helping them out. It's that old bait and switch. Get somebody to get a free flu shot, and maybe they'll buy something else.
And the pharmacies like that, they can order in quantity, too. As a solo family doctor, I only order so many flu shots. But if you're a drugstore in a town like this, you can order, I don't know how many, 10,000 of them, and of course you're going to get it at a better price.
Absolutely. Which is why Walmart has lower prices. They just can order in these huge quantities.
Yeah. So sometimes I'm talking and it sounds like I'm complaining, but maybe it would make more sense for all my patients to just get their flu shot at Walmart, Walgreens. Maybe that makes more sense.
Or just stay healthy. Everybody stay healthy.
They're getting the flu shots, so stay healthy. Well, I'm not really arguing with places like, say, Walmart, who did start that $4 list because it's helped a lot of people. And there are medicines, like there's one inhaler, like for asthma, that you can get at only Walmart, and now I think it's Target, for $9. And everywhere else, it's a whole lot more, but people don't know that.
They know it now. But that's the thing. That's the bottom line. You have to stay aware of everything. You have to keep up on everything. And no matter how big or small it seems, you have to be aware of what's going on. You have to be aware of where the best place to shop is, where the best place to get your medications, what, how to prevent things, you know, how to know when you have something serious, when to call your doctor, when to call the hospital, when to call 911, you know?
And then putting it all in one sentence, it sounds like a really big job, and people say, oh, forget it. But so the best way to do it is to think about it when you're well.
Wish we all had doctors like you. You sound like a wonderful person.
There's lots of good doctors around.
But anyway, everybody can get a copy of this book. And believe me, this book will help you in many ways you don't even think of. It's, again, called 101 Ways to Save Money on Healthcare by Cynthia Kelger, MD. And she's joined us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And this has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.